B-Pod Studios.
We're going to be joined right now by Mr. Five Overtime himself after yet another five overtime hockey game in the postseason in the NHL last night. Former Flyers captain, the great Keith Primo, joins us right now. Keith, how you doing, man?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. It's an honor to be joined by you right now. Five overtimes. That game bringing back some memories for you last night?
Yeah, no question. And I actually sat down to watch that game almost from the start. So I got a hockey fix last night that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, 4 months without hockey certainly made up for it a little bit last night. It was funny because you're watching that game last night start to finish, and who's in the glass for the NBC broadcast but Brian Boucher?
Yeah. very cool. You know, goalie for the last five overtime and broadcasting for the newest five overtime. So what great insight from both him and Jonesy for the viewer. Mm-hmm. To kind of give the perception of what was going on in our locker room that night. So it was really kind of cool to relive with them.
Yeah, I know you've done plenty of interviews about that, but I know it's a little bit more prevalent right now, being that we just had another five overtime game. But other than your game winner, what sticks out to you about the five overtime game? Is there a play or a stat, something you go back to over and over again in that game?
So there's two things that stick out for me. Was one, the first thing was the post that Alex Kovalev hit in the first shift of the first overtime. That, you know, if he scores there, then that game is just a moot point in the history of hockey games. And then the second thing was just the, we had such a jovial group of guys. We had the Jonesies, we had the Chris Therians, Tockets, Berubis. And so it was, you think a locker room, playing that long would be very serious, but it was actually very upbeat and very, very loose and melancholy. And that's probably what I'll take away, is the camaraderie of the locker room on that particular night.
Did that help? So as they say, you're not gripping the stick too tight as the game goes on. You guys are staying loose, albeit through five overtime periods.
I think so. I think there was, at some point somebody was going to score a goal, same as last night. And at that point, it becomes comical. As guys were searching for food, one of the snacks of choice was the coach's popcorn, popcorn bag that they kind of nibble on before the game. That was all that was left at that point in the night. So you had to make jokes of the situation, or else it would become very intense.
Speaking with Keith Primo, joining us right now, five overtime game last night, and then tonight the Flyers start a quest for the cup, if you will. In this version of hockey, Keith, let me just ask you this. What do you make of this hockey bubble, the two hub cities right now in the restart of the NHL?
So from a fan's perspective, it's incredible. I mean, having the ability to start watching hockey at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I feel like I'm living on the West Coast. That's really enjoyable. My youngest son, Caden, who's a goaltender in the Montreal Canadiens organization, is actually inside the bubble with the Canadiens. And so I get to see, from the inside. And there is a lot of downtime. And there's a huge commitment being made here by these athletes to make this work. And I give tremendous credit to these guys for the sacrifices they're making. And people may look and say, well, this is their, it's their job, it's their responsibility. And the reality is none of us ever consider playing hockey in the summer months, away from family for an extended period of time. So I really give them a tremendous amount of credit.
Keith, do you think it's easier for players when it's like, it's just hockey, as you said, your son's in there, you're a former player. If you're thrown into a bubble like that and it's just hockey, is it easier, do you think, to perform playing the game because that's all you're doing, or is it more difficult because of the reasons you just laid out?
Well, I think there's pros and cons throughout. I mean, the part of the excitement of playoff hockey, obviously, is the fans in a full building. I never had more fun than playing in front of 20,000 screaming fans in Philadelphia at this time, in playoff time. But there's also large market teams where the pressure of playoffs makes it very difficult to play. So, So it really levels the playing field in a lot of respects. But for the hockey purist, not, you know, the hockey, you know, the guy who's in the bubble, who, like, this is a coach and GM's absolute dream.
Yeah.
Because they're living hockey 24 hours a day, nonstop. They're at the rink, they're coaching hockey or talking hockey, or they're just living hockey. And so for those guys, this is, you know, the ultimate. But there's a lot of sacrifices that these guys make. But the experience will be something that they'll all look back on in 20 years and have fond memories.
Speaking with Keith Primeau, you certainly had a lot of coaching changes here in Philadelphia. This one from Hakstol to Vigneault. Elaine Vigneault, everyone talks about accountability. When you look at a coach like him with all the experience, how much does his, you know, basically taking two different teams to a Stanley Cup final, how much does that carry weight in a locker room like the Flyers?
A tremendous amount. And it's the pedigree is one thing, but then you have to go out and you have to implement and you have to get buy-in from your leadership group and the team in general. And I know specifically with Vigneault that the guys are following his lead, and so coaching is means a lot, especially this time of year. And he reminds me a lot of Hitch, who I hooked my wagon to, and he led me, and I think the guys are doing the same thing here.
So that's an interesting comparison that you make there, and we're all extremely excited for the Flyers, and it's not just because of a shutdown, it's because they're playing some great hockey right now. How good do you think this Flyers team is, and what do you think their ceiling is?
Well, before the bubble, people were talking about how sneaky good they were, and I was one of I felt the same thing. They're no longer sneaky. They're just good. People know how good this team is, and they've gone out and performed, and the first three round-robin games, I just went into the games knowing that they're going to win. I think they're a legitimate contender here. I think I'm doing a pool on my own with a bunch of friends, and I've got them playing in the finals. So I think they've got a real opportunity here. I think they're very focused. They've got all the pieces and the components, and I would expect it to be, you know, a deep run.
Who do you have them against going against in the finals?
It was a player pool that I did, and I grabbed a lot of Flyers.
Okay, but good choice.
But on the other side, I basically had Vegas and Avs.
Yeah,
playing off on that side.
Keith, if we take Elaine Vigneault out of the picture, because everybody that we've talked to about the difference in this Flyers team, all arrows point towards him. But if you just go on the ice on players, who is it, or what group is it, do you think, that has pushed the Flyers to this point of us all calling them contenders?
Well, I think it's the maturity of the youth, Ron Hextall had, Cliff has done a tremendous job since he's been in there as well. He's pushed the right buttons for trades. The signing of Kevin Hayes was a tremendous signing. Even at the time, it looked like a lot. But he's been a great piece to the puzzle. And now you're seeing some of these young defensemen really step in. You've got some young forwards who are very versatile. Joel Farabee is a kid I know very well. And he's a kid you can play up and down your lineup. You saw what he did the other night by moving him in the first line. And then you put him down on your third and fourth line. And he's still going to be, competitive and contribute. And then you have your goaltender. The kid's rock solid. He's come in there. He doesn't have to. The best part is at the end of the day, he doesn't always have to steal a game. He just has to make the saves he's supposed to make. And when you're a young goaltender and you have the confidence of the players in front of you, it makes it that much easier. We had the same thing with Bush. That year of the overtime game, Bush took us on a deep run because we had confidence in him and he had confidence in us.
Do you see any similarities with this Flyers team and maybe the 04 team that, you know, you took to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Lightning?
Maybe some of the mentality, but we had a couple of young guys, but we were an older group. You know, we had tremendous leadership with guys like Mark Recchi and Jeremy Roenick and
I remember Nedved came over that year.
Yeah, and I don't know if Peter was in the playoffs that year with us. If he was, I don't know if he was in the lineup.
Or maybe it was the following year.
Yeah, and then. We had guys like, Sammy Kapanen and Mark Dragnerson. And so we had Malakoff, Zamna. We had a great group of guys that, but we had a little more experience, and whereas this group is a little bit younger, a little bit more raw, as far as entire depth, but they've got all the pieces, so I'm preparing myself for some hockey for the next couple months.
Yeah, I had my ears crossed up. It was the following year that Nedved came over there, but yeah, that was a year that I think Sammy Kapanen did you guys move him to defense that year?
Yeah, and that was probably when you look back on that year that Rico got hurt when JR ran him over behind the net in the Toronto series. And that really hurt us because Rico was our anchor back there. You know, he'd play 25 minutes a night, and then we said to start moving. And then you didn't take Sammy off of my line, and you're putting him on defense, and it just tipped the balance for us. Sammy did an unbelievable job, but at that point it hurt us a little bit, and that's all it takes at that time of year.
Keith, I have to ask you this. How are you doing now? I know that concussions have been a battle for you. How are you doing right now with everything?
I'm doing really well, thanks. Thanks for asking. Mm-hmm. I'm finally working out consistently. For the longest time, it was very difficult for me because it would go right to my head and affect me, with fatigue and lethargy, and I couldn't do anything consistently. I have business, and I have my kids are all well and healthy, and I've got grandkids now, and so life is good.
Good to hear. Keith, I can't thank you enough for coming on with us, man. I know it was a last-minute thing, but we really appreciate it, and glad to hear you're doing so well, man.
Thanks, guys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.